Thank you for joining us on History FM Radio on liveparanormal.com and history.fm. From paranormal to the unexplained history, it all happens here. Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in live interactive chat 24/7 with our radio show hosts and other like-minded people on www.liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interactive media. Stop by now and join in on the fun.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of liveparanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Liveparanormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by full interaction media. Stop by now and join the fun.
Stop by now and join the fun.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you're
you are listening to My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
Stefan Brigati, and thank you for hanging out with us tonight on a wonderful Thursday. Hope you guys are somewhere well and being safe. If it's hot out there, I hope it's cooling down a little bit for you. If it's cold out there, I hope it's getting warmer for you. Wherever it is, I hope it's good for you. So, with that being said, just throwing out some good vibes there. I had a crazy week and pretty busy. In addition to the TV show that I normally do, our series that we're streaming now on Paraflix and Roku TV. Been doing a lot of side stuff, you know, been getting invited to do a lot of other paranormal work, and did some filming yesterday for a couple of great projects coming up, big stuff, so real excited about it. Can let you know. As soon as I hear that, I can go ahead and spread the word. You guys will be the first to know. So thank you so much for being a part of that. And for those of you even checking out the first few episodes of Series 1 streaming now, I do appreciate it. With that being said, my guest tonight is Brandi Stark. She's actually Dr. Brandi Stark, criminal investigator and founding member of Spirits of St. Petersburg, and that is in Florida. She's been investigating the paranormal for quite a while now. She's an educator, goes around giving talks, helping other people, learning more about the paranormal. A lot of different things. And just like a lot of people, she got into the paranormal because, you know, it kind of happens sometimes at childhood. Like I always say, I didn't choose to be paranormal. Paranormal kind of chose me. And here we are today, having a conversation about the paranormal. So I guess it just goes full circle. And that's a good thing. So let's go ahead and bring her on the show and get this party started. One second, please. Here we go.
Okay. So, hi, Fanny. How's it going over there? Yes, can you hear me?
How are you? I can hear you perfectly.
Well, I'm sad to say that Florida, even though it's 11 o'clock here, it is hot and muggy outside. So I kind of wish it would cool down here, but I think we're stuck for a while in July. But we're doing okay.
Wow.
How about you? Oh, yeah. This is not a fun time.
It gets pretty hot out here near Death Valley. It's like 130 degrees, which is not good for anybody unless you're a reptile.
Yeah, that is true.
But lucky for me, I'm up here a little bit towards the coast, so I'm actually at the beach, which isn't too bad. But you know, we're used to living in a certain temperature, so
mm-hmm.
even though it seems a little bit cooler, we still feel like we're a little bit warmer compared to everywhere else. But so I still complain, even though it's only like 70 degrees outside right now, and everybody else is dying in the 90s and stuff, and I feel bad for them. So.
Don't worry about it, because, I mean, everybody in Florida knows this is coming, and it just never matters because we all complain about it anyway. We're having a lovely bout of red tide. That's St. Petersburg is right off the Gulf, and so, it's been a weird year. 2020 was truly bizarre. 2021 has been this weird mixed energy, like kind of good and bad all together. So, you know, we're just going to ride it out until 2022 and hope we finally get it right. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah, I think so, because we had to throw the brakes on in 2020, which nobody expected. And then where do we go from there? We've been just sitting dormant and saying, okay, I guess we're going to all do something now. So where are we going from this? And I think that's what it is. Plus, in 2020, we were just so miserable. We just thought 2021 was going to be so amazing again. You know, it's just this revolving door. I'm not sure where we're at. And we're already more than halfway done with this year. So what's going on?
Well, my prediction was it was going to take 2021 until about August to kind of get its own flavor. So, but I didn't expect the Delta variant to be hitting. And it was truly an odd time. And I know, you know, even from a paranormal investigation standpoint, I have an art studio, because when I'm not teaching and doing the paranormal, I'm an artist, because, you know, I don't have enough to do. But the studio is actually in a haunted building, which is totally rocks for me. The building, it's for this part of Florida, it's fairly old. It goes back to about 1916. And for about, 75 years, it was a department store. The original owner passed away. His son inherited it and closed it very unexpectedly in 1990. And then it became, over time, about 96, it became studio space for artists. So it's a really cool building. I love it. And I was not expecting to get a studio. You know how you were saying that sometimes the paranormal just finds you? I had a piece of art that was jury selected in for an art show at Florida Craft Art, which is the landlord for this art studio space. And the director came up and said, come and see this space with me. And we went upstairs and there was this room, and I wasn't looking for a studio, didn't want a studio, and then I had to have that studio. It was like the worst thing. They made me wait for several weeks before they finally said, yes, you're good to go, and I got the studio. But the cool thing is that it kind of gives me a nice base to study what's going on, and the Spirits of St. Petersburg, my team, we can get there at night. There's technically 19 artists that have their own individual studios, so mine is a fully enclosed room, and it's actually a nice size. But we usually kind of wait for nighttime because most of the artists are gone at that point, and we can test our equipment. We've been dealing with the SLS kinetic camera. Started dealing with our spirit portal and, kind of all of these various things. And it is so optimal. I can't believe it, and I'm just thrilled to be there. Happily, the ghosts are very friendly. I do think one of them was the original department store owner. But we have a mystery ghost, and I'm not sure who she is. We think there's a portal in the building. The irony was I was called in 2013 to investigate this building 5 years before I ever even looked at getting a studio. And the only thing we could really find was this, you know, very mild portal, but it was people identify it. I mean, I've had multiple tours through the building and multiple folks come through, and everybody knows what this thing is there, this little vortex. So I'm not sure what's going on, but there's a female presence that has kind of started to manifest a little bit. And she seems to be in some distress, and I'm not really sure why. She's not dangerous, she's not harmful, but she wants some help. And I, you know, I'm not a sensitive, I'm not a psychic, I'm an academic. I kind of stay on that side, but I have had folks that have come through. I think we might have, we did actually pick up an EVP from her, and what she's actually saying help. You know, we can't seem to get a lot of information, you know, how to help her, what she wants. You know, so that's a little frustrating right now. And I don't know if she's really transient, if she's, you know, going to kind of fade away. The main entity that's there, as I said, he's pretty steadfast. Every time, you know, I tell his story, his name is Mr. Rutland, Hubert Rutland. You know, I've had folks for years, you know, for the past 3 years actually say, you know, when you tell you, you know, particularly those that are sensitive or think they are, they'll say, you know, there's this guy standing behind you, and they give you the same description, light hair, glasses, a button-down white shirt. One person actually picked up that he was carrying a cigar, and it turns out Mr. Rutland did. You know, he loves to hear your story. He loves to hear you talk about this building. You know, so I think he gets a little bit of pride from hearing his story. So, you know, but with COVID, even the art studio, because we couldn't have people in the building, we couldn't do, we normally have things called art walks where people come in, and a lot of the artists, you know, ended up just kind of staying home and not even going to the studios anymore. And it was, I was very surprised. I really thought activity would have increased. You know, maybe the entity kind of wanting to reach out more, or, you know, folks, you know, kind of wanting some attention, but instead it was completely the opposite. The building just got very still, and we had very few results for a while. So I'm really hoping that we don't get that Delta variant going. Florida is, I love Florida, but it is the state of madness, and we have some interesting things that go through with our politicians and the, you know, kind of the health issues right now. But, you know, it did kind of put a little crimp in there for trying to advance paranormal study. We just kind of started getting things back to normal, and now I'm going, oh, no. But, you know, if we all have to stay home, we all have to stay home. I guess that's the way it is. But
yeah, exactly. What else are we going to do?
That's it. And it was interesting because we did start getting more reports from people that they saw more phenomenon with staying home. And I think in part, I kind of jokingly say, probably like our pets, you know, the ghost going, oh, come on, what are you doing here? You need to go back to work, you know. So there was a little bit of an increase for some places. But of course, you know, it was also, I think we only did a few paranormal investigations, and it was, you know, you had to be fully masked and gloved, and, you know, we had to have space, and it was really interesting. We'll see where 2021 goes. But it sounds like you have been quite busy, and that sounds very exciting.
Yeah, I have been doing the radio show for a while, and then beginning of the year I got approached to do a paranormal series, and I was going to do that, so I was putting pieces together, but I wasn't ready for it to happen that fast, so I just kind of jumped on it and went for it, and away we go. So it's been doing really good.
Excellent.
And that has led to so many other options from other, you know, shows and production companies, so I'm just doing all kinds of stuff, just living paranormal every day. So it's pretty great.
Oh, that sounds like it's fun. Yeah, very good.
So let me ask you a couple of questions. And this is a very common one that I like to ask, because it defines the beginning steps of your life into the paranormal. And a lot of people have to listen to the show. Sometimes they are afraid to really look into it, or afraid to discuss it, but if they hear somebody else's story, it might shed some light for them, and it might help them understanding what's going on with them. So if you can tell us how you started from the beginning of how you got involved in the paranormal, what started it for you?
It's odd, because I am kind of an odd person. I always have been. I've been very individualistic. When I was younger, actually, I remember this very clearly. When I was in fifth grade, they had these little reading cards. Now, remember, I'm old. I don't think they do this anymore. But they had these little cards that you would pull out and you would read. And I don't remember if you got a grade for it or not. But they had one on Uri Geller about his ability to bend spoons. And I just thought that was the coolest thing. Now, of course, that's been, you know, highly debated now. But, you know, it was an interesting read when you're 11 or 10 or how old that was. I started reading books on the paranormal. And I'm a Gen Xer, so I will tell you that when I started reading these books, they were all mixed topics. So you would get a book on the paranormal, and it would have Bigfoot, you know, Loch Ness Monster, UFOs, psychic abilities, and then they would have ghost stories. And I did really well until I got to the ghost stories, and then I'd be terrified. I was terrified I'd see a ghost. So I actually did. It turns out, very ironically, I was kind of doing what I now tell people to do, and that's envisioning, you know, that you're in a safe bubble or type thing, you know. I remember being a child and having to imagine that when I was in bed, I was in a pocket, a safe pocket of space, that nothing, I would not see anything. So, and that worked very nicely. But when I got into college and university, I started... Even my degrees are a little weird because I have history and classics, and nobody anymore has a classics degree. So that was in Greco-Roman studies. So I started doing some research on the role of ghosts for the ancient Greeks. And in fact, I did a very short paper on how Homeric epics actually transformed the ideas of Greek afterlife. And, you know, it was just a cute little thing, but it got accepted to some conferences, and I remember reading it, and it was my kind of first foray into that. And I started to really become fascinated. And so as I continued on, I just started making that the theme of most of my writing. So my first graduate degree was in religious studies, and my thesis was on the role of ghosts in Roman culture. And it's about a 50-page paper, and I love that one. I actually ended up getting a doctorate and two other graduate degrees because I just, you know, don't know when to stop. But I had one thesis that was on feminism in comic books, which, you know, okay, not particularly ghostly. But I did one thesis on the dance macabre des femmes as a form of proto-feminism. So I got to kind of look at the evolution of the revenant in the medieval era and the transformation between a revenant and today's zombie. So the revenant was somebody who died whose body wasn't decomposing fast enough, but they had ejected their soul. But because the soul was ejected, if the body was not putrefying, it could be possessed by a demon. So you would have a revenant that way. And you did have revenant ghost stories as well, which is kind of odd. But and then, you know, by the time we get around to today, it's no longer about the soul. You know, the whole zombie phenomenon is about the loss of the mind and becoming mindless. And consuming as well, but kind of fun. So it just, I just kept going with it. And I ended up becoming, I am a professor, but I was full-time faculty for a while. Kind of sad to say higher education is not what it used to be. And it was just so stressful that I decided to step back to part-time, which is a very strange thing for somebody to do. But I love teaching, and I bring in ghosts into ideologies of humanities and religion, which are my primary teachings. And so it's allowed me to do more research and to kind of keep going with it. So in kind of dovetailing with that, in 1997, I think, was when I did my first paper, and I started looking around at other resources for ghosts. And in this area, they had a book called The Tampa Bay Triangle by Captain Bill Miller.
Cool.
Yeah, and it was the only book I could find about this area. And once again, it actually had carpet circles instead of crop circles, aliens using our local Sunshine Skyway Bridge to call home. You know, and it had all of these weird things, but then it had a section once again on ghosts. And so... that kind of got me hooked on this area, and I started doing my own paranormal investigations, which it turns out you're not supposed to do, and thank God for the internet, because I found people from the 70s and 80s, kind of the prior generation ghost hunters, and they were starting to form groups, and they kind of became mentors for me. I remember one investigation I did at USF St. Petersburg campus with permission, and I was so excited because I was using a film camera because I am that old again, but I had taken a picture, and I thought I had something. I was so pleased, and back in that time period, you had to work to get these images scanned so that you could share them online. And,
this is an email group.
So even worse than that, I had to get attached it to an email. And I remember I was shattered because one of the folks looked at it, and he was a very strong hobbyist photographer. And he's like, no, that's nothing more than a double exposure. And I was like, oh, my gosh. So it was an interposed image, but it's, you know, whatever. They kind of helped keep me towing that line. The arts also started. I started showing as an artist in 1997, and right around 99 to 2000, I was starting to do more shows, and I did a Halloween show. And they wanted me to talk about ghosts, and I was like, okay, sure, you know, my nice little young self. And ultimately, I had a couple that came up afterwards, and they said, hi, we're retired. We're house inspectors, so they had all the equipment that I had been reading about, which I couldn't afford because I was still going for those degrees. And they're like,
"We'd
love to join."
Yeah, meters and everything. Absolutely. That's
yeah,
cool.
It was fun, and it was like a little family unit. And they said, "You have the knowledge. We've got the equipment," and we started doing investigations. We became named in 2000, and it's just gone ever since. I really was very surprised. I thought this would be about a 5-year thing, and here I am, and it's been like 24 years, and I'm like, wow, here we are. I mean, we're doing an investigation next week at Brooksville, so, you know, it just kind of keeps going. So hopefully that helps somebody, but I don't know. It's just very unusual. But again, I did find that I was able to kind of get out of that fear factor element with the paranormal kind of through the use of intellect and reason and research. And that kind of gave me a nice stable platform to really expand from. So it's been fun.
Yeah. It kind of gives you that background and, you know, like you're talking about that kind of sense of fear of the paranormal because the unknown and everyone gets creeped
mm-hmm.
out by it. But once you start
mm-hmm.
studying it and looking more into it, you realize, oh, this isn't scary at all. This is actually not even paranormal. It's more normal because it's everywhere all the time.
Yes.
And everyone's affected by it. And we can, it's just another dimension going on that's right there.
That's
so
it.
We should be able to tap into that and expand our mm-hmm. world with that as well. So that's awesome that you were able to figure that out.
Well, with religious studies, the nice thing is they talk about essentially the unconditioned and conditioned world. Unconditioned being outside of time and space and conditioned, you know, with us, time and space bound. But in between is something called the liminal state. And the liminal state is the communication element between those two realms. And so for religious studies, that's very important, and that's where ghosts fit. Ghosts, spirits, angels, I mean, the whole slew of what we study, they're all there. And so, yeah, you know, there are times when you do kind of see a crossing between those two realms. You have an encounter with something liminal. And, you know, I almost feel like everybody gets at least one in their lifetime where they're like, did that really happen? and I have collected stories. People have told me stories for literally decades now. And it's kind of to the point where I'm like, yeah, it probably did. You know, usually family. I get a lot of stories about family and folks, you know, they'll be a little bit shy and they're like, I don't know if this is, you know, if this really happened, but after my father died, I smelled, you know, his cigar smoke as he walked through, you know, like he used to smoke these cigars every night at 11. And I'm like, yeah, family is the number one reported phenomenon. And so,
absolutely,
you know, they're just checking on you. And so it kind of gives people a sense of comfort as well. So, you know, I've tried to work on kind of building up an ethical element, compassion, reason, and trustworthiness. So I think that's a very important part of the field.
Absolutely. It's given that extra information, that sense of what to do in that situation, especially
yeah.
when we're talking about relative spirits, you know, because
yeah.
which blows me away because when everyone's talking about hauntings and stuff, a lot of the cases that we see are coming later in the year. Fall starts really picking up and getting active, and of course we're going into you know, Halloween in November, and all of a sudden we got Christmas is happening, all the holidays. So any of those spirits that have passed that are always with us during those times, they're going to come back and visit. They're like, oh, it's that year. It's time of year again. Let's go see what everyone's doing. So they're always there. And, you know, that's when we talk about things like being relatively haunted. That's because your relatives and your loved ones are coming to see you. Even your pets and stuff, all your animals, your dogs, everything that you share the energy of love with, is going to always come back to you because it's binding us all together. I think that's an awesome thing.
Absolutely. And in fact, one of the subgenres that I study is paranormal pets. I have a podcast on paranormal pets through Pet Life Radio. And, you know, I've done over 100 episodes now. And I've always found that amazing. In fact, I'm trying to keep everybody quiet. I thought everybody would be sacked out by now because it's so late down here. But I have a grumble of pugs. So I have it's basically a pug pack. And they're wonderful, wonderful pets. And in fact, I have a paranormal pug. So there's always one pug that on special cases that I've checked out, you know, he comes along kind of as an instrument. And as a third generation paranormal pug. You know, just the amount of stories that I've gotten over the years are they're just incredible. And I think in today's world, people kind of need that because we're starting to discover that, number one, animals are more sentient, which the West is a little slow to catch up with. And number two, that, you know, they are very much a part of our energy. So the role of the afterlife has become significant. It's very meaningful for people. I think some of that stigma about animals and ghosts has kind of faded, which I think is good, particularly because in the past, probably the past 40 years, as we've gotten more crowded and more urbanized and we're more depressed than ever, people have taken solace in their pets. So, you know, I know at one point I was just so drained from my faculty job. You know, there were some mornings that I'm like, you know what, I still have to get up because I got to make sure the pugs are taken care of and that they've got food. You know, so we got to go and do this. But that's how, you know, important I think animals have become. So, yeah, incredible stuff.
That's great.
And anyway, if you hear any barking or anything, I apologize. I think they finally have settled down. But, oh, my Lord. The one night I need them to go to sleep early, they're up until 11. Like, okay.
Something exciting is happening. We got to stay up and check it out. It's like, no, go to sleep.
Yes, exactly. So, they're like kids. They are like kids.
Oh, those are the pugs that you have on your Facebook page, right?
Yes. Yep.
Oh, how cute.
Thank you. Yeah, they're fantastic guys. I'm a third generation pug owner, and I grew up with them. You know, I tell people they're not dogs. They're part canine, part feline, and part human. So as long as you understand that, and of course, you know, I do not do much with aliens because I'm just focusing on ghosts mostly. But I will tell folks that, you know, I'm waiting for the pugs to start talking to me like Men in Black. either the aliens are coming back or I have gone insane. You know, so it's one of those two categories should that ever happen.
But how much fun would that be, though, right?
Oh, my gosh, I'd love it. But I'm almost afraid of what they'd say. It's probably, you know, you're not feeding us enough. We want more wasps.
Yeah, we don't want to eat that anymore. Where's the good stuff?
Yeah, they're very demanding. They're very elite little creatures, though. but anyway,
funny.
Yeah.
Well, that's awesome. So you started your paranormal team. Right.
Mm-hmm.
So,
right.
So you're on this journey. You're enjoying yourself, exploring, checking stuff out, doing the research. You start your paranormal team. Tell us a little bit about what you wanted to do with your team, because there's so many different types of styles of investigation out there. What did you choose to start with this team and go forward?
Well, because the paranormal field is exactly as you described, that is so widespread. There is no true canon. I mean, the televised television shows, you know, they provide a baseline, but truthfully, you know, it's still a pseudoscience. I mean, it's not a hard science yet. It's moving in that direction, but not there yet. So what we chose to focus on was methodology. So the idea is that we do not have a laboratory setting, and we're not going to have a laboratory setting for our paranormal investigations. So what became very important was to kind of create some roles for people, a person who is the contact who knows about what is going on, team members who are either technical, investigators in general, or sensitives, who will usually go in kind of blind, an off-site historian or somebody to do some research, so that we try to keep the information as contained as possible. You know, we do keep a homeowner on site because, I mean, you just have to. But, you know, we do a process where we do a first walkthrough, which is a cold walkthrough. Since I'm usually the contact, I sit with the homeowner so that I am not giving anything away. The team will come back. They have notebooks. They are writing down notes, which I think is very important so that people can see these things are already written. And then we actually will go through one person after another, and I will literally type about 90 words a minute on my computer and try to kind of track what everybody's saying. And then we triage. So if everybody's picking up something in the master bedroom, or the majority are, you know, we'll kind of have a discussion and I'll say, well, you know, where do you all think we should go? The notes, you know, I see three mentions of the master bedroom. So once we have kind of figured out the hottest spots, we will do our EVPs, we'll do videos, photography, and we really try to focus to try to get that entity to communicate. We do try to be very polite. I do tell folks, usually homeowners are very worried that their ghost isn't going to do anything for us. And I'm like, you really don't need to worry about it. It'll be okay. But, you know, we do try to come in with a very open mind, and we will say, you know, we'll actually explain the process, not only to the homeowner, but, you know, I'll say if anybody else is present, this is what we're doing. You know, I try to kind of give a step-by-step so they know what we're doing. We still have a few, like, we're getting ready to do the world's largest ghost hunt in September, and we're doing the Suntan Art Center. And unfortunately, there are two ghosts there. They're delightful, friendly, but not particularly communicative again. I'm like, oh, what is it with these ghosts? So they will scoot out of the way. And so, you know, we're kind of doing some a little bit of work ahead of time saying, okay, this is what we're going to be doing. We really do want to communicate with you. We don't want you to run away. You don't have to. We're not here to harm you. We're not here to chase you out. But we do try to act as mediators. So the homeowner knows what's going on. If we can get some research that, you know, pings with our results. And we try to get a household that is calm. We're not exorcists. We're not out to, you know, disrupt anything. We can recommend, you know, if you really want this gone, you know, there are people you can contact. It's just not us, because if you mess that up, you know, it's a pretty heavy result. But again, we've stuck to that mediator role. And usually what we find is homeowners will report that there's at least a six-week period where everything is very calm. If activity does come back, it's usually milder. And they do kind of start to learn to take control of their own space. So I think there's a psychological element there, too, that we are the living. This is the conditioned reality. You know, you need to just tell it. You know, so even if there is no ghost there, sometimes just hearing yourself talking out loud and saying, I do not want this to happen, it can either alter your own mindset state, or it gets the ghost to kind of say, oh, okay, I'm not supposed to bother people at night. If phenomenon ramps up, which is a minority of the time, but every now and again you do, you know, you will have some results that way. You know, we do try to come back and make sure we can calm everything down again. For the most part, you know, it has been very interesting, you know, kind of keeping track of all of this. I would love someday to start creating a database where I can just, and I know there's a way to do it, I just haven't had the time, but where we can just start pinpointing, because I know that there are kind of track areas where we have a lot of calls for phenomenon, that we do a lot of investigations. but it has been, you know, it's been really a very interesting time. I've actually had a few teams, bless their hearts, that over the years have contacted me and asked if it was okay if they used our methodology, which is absolutely fine. You know, as long as it is kept to that respectful level, which I think is what's so important. But from an academic standpoint, there's something called qualitative research. That's what I did my dissertation with, because I like qualitative. It's a smaller pool of people that you're studying, but the researcher becomes the instrument, so we are the ones interpreting the data. And what you do is you actually start looking for similarities in the results, and those are what you focus on. So that's kind of our primary goal.
Well, that's awesome, getting to work like that and with those kind of theories and practices. Makes it a little bit easier for everyone to be on the same team going forward using that those type of parameters of investigation. So that's awesome.
Yeah.
And the world's largest ghost hunt, that sounds amazing. I mean, how many people are you guys thinking you're going to have in there?
Well, we're looking at about 28. I've submitted my information to get our ticket link up, and it hasn't come back to me yet. So I'm like, okay, I'll have to start kind of. But a small group, because what we'd like to do are breakout sessions. So I've got six team members that are going to coordinate this. We're going to have a main room where everybody first meets. We'll start doing kind of an introduction of Paranormal Investigation 101. We're going to follow that with some breakout sessions in which one team member is going to talk about how to use the SLS kinetics camera and how that works, how to review data, because I have one person who's very good about doing data. I mean, like, I've done it for years, and I'm just so glad I have somebody who's like, I love doing this. I'm like, oh, thank God. There you go.
Yes, that's
so
a lot of work.
She's been
right
very
there.
Good about, you have no idea what a wonderful thing that is. Because what she'll do is she'll go through all of the clips. She will mark them with maybes, with, you know, very strong. And then we actually get together and we will go through them one by one and decide, you know, is this worth keeping or do we discard it? So she's going to have a section. I will probably talk about EMF meters, EMF detectors in general, kind of a general Q&A and maybe some research elements. We have one person that's going to deal with spirit portal, spirit box, and EVPs. And then I've got two ladies who will work together. We're going to do a meditation for people who might be sensitive or who want to kind of prepare themselves because, of course, even if you're not as sensitive, it doesn't matter because you are going to have to focus for a pretty extended amount of time. So kind of a secular meditation on how to, you know, kind of prepare your mind for that focus. And I think it'll be really fun. I think at the end we are going to try a couple of other techniques. We'll regather. But we're really, really looking forward to it. It's just been kind of interesting because I work with artists. And so, you know, it's been kind of like herding cats, and you just get used to that. So we finally got everything cleared, and we're just kind of working with trying to get the world's largest ghost hunt, you know, those final things clicked into place and get everything up and running. But we studied the suntan, oh, gosh, I think 2 or 3 years, because I've been a member there as well. And we've had a few little phenomenon that have happened, like the most haunted area. I do remember taking my video camera up, and just out of nowhere, it just went to static, just completely to static, and the battery just went right down. I'm like, oh, look at this. We went back downstairs. We moved away from that area. Camera was back to normal, completely back to normal. So we did try a couple other times, and it didn't happen again. So it's, you know, I'm always like, well, but still pretty cool. So we're going to see if we can get that to happen again.
That would be awesome.
Wouldn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. How much fun would that be?
Well, we're hoping. We're hoping.
Well, good luck with that. Let me know what happens. So out of all your investigative stuff that you've done over the years, tell us about your favorite experience.
Oh, well, you know, honestly, I think some of my very favorite ones, I've got like 10 that I love. in this area, there was a fellow by the name of Jack Kerouac who became a founder of the Beat Generation. He was an author and he wrote On the Road. And the irony is I've taught from that book, so I also teach literature. That's one of my degrees. And he lived in St. Petersburg, and he would go to a place called the Flamingo Bar. Unfortunately, he was a little addicted to alcohol, but he has a house here in St. Petersburg as well, or he had one that I think just sold, and they're supposed to be keeping it. I mean, it's weird. It's like a little time bubble to the 1960s. But he would go to our local bookstore, and he would go to check out his books. And when the staff weren't looking, he would grab his books and he'd put them in a better spot because he never liked where they put them because they alphabetized everything. So he did pass away in the 60s, and almost immediately afterwards, this bookstore started getting haunted by him. There were reports that people actually saw just his torso walking through the area, that they had some store cats, and the cats would follow somebody and meow even when nobody was there. They would have books that would come off the shelf in that area where he was constantly moving his material. So we got to investigate it. And this was right before the 2004 kind of television slam where paranormal teams just popped up everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
So it was still kind of novel. But when we went in, I had an EMF meter, and they had turned off the power for us, bless their hearts. And my EMF meter started to, and this was back in the day, it was an elf meter, if you remember those. It was so cute. But it was cheap, and I was still a student. So my little elf meter starts registering, and I'm like, this thing doesn't pick up anything but, like, air conditioning units, refrigerators. I mean, it has to be some EMF really gone. And I just kind of felt compelled. I was standing in front of, ironically, an art book section. I mean, that was weird. And I had my 400-speed black and white film camera with me, and I was just like, I've got to take pictures. So I took several shots of the area, and this was back in the day when we had Ecker Drugs, and you would go in and you drop your film off, and they develop it, and you go pick it up. And right in the middle of those shots, there's a mist image going straight across.
Cool.
And I loved it. And I found out years later, I couldn't believe this. They didn't tell me this, but that there was an employee who was actually putting books back in that area. The store had been closed, maybe shelving books. And he heard somebody walk up behind him and say, hey, how you doing? And he turned around to say, who are you and why are you here? And it was a distinctly male voice, so I think it was Jack. And, of course, he was completely alone. I do know that I had a couple of spirits members who did not know about Jack Kerouac, and they were describing him. One person's like, yeah, there's a guy here with salt and pepper hair, and she's giving this description of him. I'm like, okay.
Awesome.
And he also thought we were very entertaining, which I thought was great. I was like, well, if you got to have one, at least we're keeping him amused just as he is keeping us, you know, just on our toes and delighted. So that's one of my very, very favorites, because I felt like that Tampa Theater, where I had a hand on the shoulder, I had, you know, temperature spike, the whole deal. We had guests with us. So Tampa Theater is haunted by Fink Fox, Fink, yes, anyway, a former manager. And I was actually getting, once again, some readings off my little elf meter outside of a doorway that turned out, they told us later, was his office. And I'm like, well, that would have been cool to know. And all of a sudden, I felt some pressure on my shoulder. I was like, guys, something's going on here. Everybody's equipment completely died. One person managed to get their thermometer working again, and they're like, you've got a temperature spike right on your shoulder, like 7 degrees. So that was really cool. So, you know, it's I will say, since this is my darkest hour, really, the one unpleasant ghost I really encountered was at the May Stringer House, which is a pretty famous house here. They have it's in Brooksville, so it's about an hour from where I'm at, a little bit more. I've been there about three times, and they have unfortunately, a misogynistic ghost that is up in the attic, and he really does not like women. I'm not particularly sensitive, so, you know, I'll go in there. I'm fine. I'm polite, but okay. But a couple of times, there was one time in which I literally had a mixed team, men and women, and several of the women were like, we just cannot stay up here. They were just like, I'm out. and they had to leave because they started feeling so overwhelmed. On that trip, I also had somebody who felt like she was scratched down her back, and it didn't dawn on me at first, but you know, I was like, look, whoever's here, you need to back off, and I got scratched across the face.
Oh, wow.
I was like, wow. So that was interesting, and it was weird. He could have done much worse. It was just one scratch, and it didn't leave a mark, but it was weird. It's weird when it happens because it just burns, and it burns, and it burns, and it's like, I don't know what's going on, but, you know, we kind of figured it out, and we did end up kind of retreating out, but, you know, there's just so many experiences. I've seen one team member pushed once. We found a floating hot spot, like literally this ball of heat that's like floating in the middle of a theater. You didn't see it. You had to feel it. And in fact, one group found it and they're all like touching it and everything like this. And they called the other group to come over to see about this floating hot spot. And we get there and it's gone. And they're like, but it was, I swear to you, this was all going on. Well, we started walking through the rows, and about three rows up was this hot spot again. And it turns out the theater is haunted by most likely a deceased manager. And I think, in all honesty, he was just getting, I think it was him, and I think he was annoyed because I think he was, you know, hanging out. And we kept poking at him with this floating hot spot, and he literally moved. I mean, it's just, there's just so much. And there are a lot of cases, though, where, you know, it's very mild activity or no activity, or, you know, it's really just sensitive getting something, or, you know, just they're kind of what I call like the standard. There's just nothing like super exciting that makes you go, oh, my gosh. There's plenty of those. But, you know, it's that case that you get. You know, it kind of rolls around every 15 cases and you get something really cool and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm going to keep doing this forever. So,
you start getting that rush of investigation.
Yeah, it pays off. It just makes it so worthwhile. But we tend to be a little bit stricter on what we really do consider evidence. And, you know, I've spent a number of years having to explain that orbs are not phenomenon. And now the latest thing, are usually not phenomenon. I mean, rare cases. But now the latest phenomenon is people will send you security camera footage and invariably, and we've actually followed up going to locations, et cetera, and it's insects. You know, it's kind of like, yeah, and trying to convince folks sometimes that, you know, this really isn't paranormal. This is an insect crawling across your lens. It's not always easy, but I've always tried to, again, be very trustworthy. You know, if we think the site is haunted, we will tell you. If we're not picking up on something, we will tell you. And if we can find a cause for something, you know, we will tell you. But security video cameras are like now the bane of my existence. I'm like, oh, my gosh. I just, you know, can't we get something other than a bug or a spider or a spider web? You know, we're kind of looking for that, something a little bit easier to say, okay, that doesn't look like anything I've ever seen before, and that's what we're looking for. So anyway.
That's cool.
Yeah.
So in addition to all that stuff of the investigation with your team and you're setting up these events, which are awesome, you're also doing ghost tours around your area. You still doing that?
Yes, we are. And in fact, for COVID, what we ended up doing, I started this with a tour company that had a bus, and it was about 14 people. Of course, then we started getting these going, and then COVID hit, and it's like, well, we can't do the bus. So when that happened, I still got people who wanted to do something. So I said, well, let's do a walking tour through downtown St. Petersburg. And I do set them up only on request. So if people want to do it, there's like a website or you can email me and we'll set it up. I've got one, in fact, Sunday. I keep them small. So usually it's, you know, 2 to 7 people. For a while I was doing just, you know, family units or family and friends, and we all had to be masked and et cetera. But now, particularly because we're outside for most of it, you don't have to do the mask. But it is optional. But we actually go through sites where either I've gotten very reliable information. So I've talked to managers, We will actually, on the tours, every now and again, somebody who works there will come out and they're like, what are you doing? I'm like, well, we're doing a ghost tour. They're like, this place is haunted. I'm like, well, yes, according to the lore. And they'll be like, oh my gosh, because I just had this experience. And they'll tell us their story. And you're like, cool, look at that. We have three interactive spots on the way back, and the last one is actually the studio building, so we will go through there. We're still doing the tours. I've been doing them about $18 a person, but the tours are at least an hour and a half. I mean, you're getting your money's worth. They're usually about an hour and 45 minutes. I do my best to get folks out, but it gives people a chance to ask questions. I talk about the history of St. Pete. I really try to kind of pack in information as well as the ghost story so that folks, you know, kind of walk away with a better understanding of who St. Petersburg is.
Perfect. That sounds like fun, too.
It is, yeah.
And you have a couple of books out, too, right?
Yes, and in fact, I'm going to plug one other quick event. If somebody is in this area, I do a lot of talks, and I will be doing a talk October the 14th for the St. Petersburg Museum of History on local ghost stories. We have actually right now what I'm doing this summer is I'm combining my two volumes into a single volume paranormal book called Supernatural St. Petersburg and Paranormal Pinellas for our county, Pinellas County. And I've been adding, I added, I think, three or four new chapters. So cleaning up the chapter and then adding in new. And I should have those by September. But if folks want to see what I've already got, they are up on Amazon. Just type in Brandi Stark and they should pop up. I try to include local history as well as the actual hauntings, and these are all places, once again, that we've investigated.
That's awesome. What about the near future? Do you have any events coming up that you're going to be speaking at or any type of paracons?
The biggest thing right now, I've got, there's a local convention called Necronomicon. It started off as a Lovecraft literary convention, but I will do it, either be on a panel or I'll do a talk. I've been with them since 1998, so I'm like, wow, that's pretty cool too. It's an early outreach. So that's coming up the last weekend of September. We've got the World's Largest Ghost Hunt coming up September 25th. I've got the October 14th St. Pete Museum of History talk. Those are the three big ones right now. We're kind of trying to batten down the hatches and really get ready for World's Largest Ghost Hunt. That's our big focus. But if folks are interested or would like to talk, you know, I'm happy to do them. I love sharing knowledge, and I like hearing from people and hearing about their experiences and hearing where they are and seeing if I can help at all. So, yeah, that's where we are.
Excellent. And if anybody wants to get a hold of you for any other additional information, what would be the best way?
A couple different ways. You can do the Spirits of St. Petersburg site, which is www.spiritsofstpete.com. After years of typing out St. Petersburg, I shortened it to St. Pete because it's just forever. We've got, you can contact me through Gmail, brandybstark13@gmail.com. And I do, again, have a Paranormal Pets podcast. And in fact, I'm getting ready to do a couple new episodes this month. We've got some new episodes coming out. That is on petliferadio.com. So you go to petliferadio.com and look for Paranormal Pets, and that's me.
Awesome. Well, we are coming to the end of the show. An hour goes by pretty quick. I do thank you for joining us and spending some time with us and getting that word out there. For those of you who are listening late, you are listening to My Darkest Hour. Tonight, my guest is Brandi Stark. We've been talking about her work with Spirits of St. Petersburg, her books, and a couple of the events that she's going to be coming up to. So you can check on the links that I put on the event page and go to her web pages and be able to contact her and ask her some questions.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you so, so much. It was an honor to be asked onto your show.
Oh, thank you so much. And after you get that World's Largest Event, you'll have to hit me up and let me know how it goes, and we'll have you come back on the show and talk about that. That sounds really
exciting. I'd love to. I'm excited too. Fingers crossed.
All right. Well, thank you, and you have a great evening.
You do the same. Take care.
Bye now. All right, everybody, that is going to be it for my darkest hour. I want to thank everybody out there at Live Paranormal. Everybody, History FM, iHeartRadio, iTunes, everyone that's making it happen, all the moderators in the chat room. Once again, go check out my show, My Darkest Hour, Into the Further, on Roku TV and Paraflix, streaming right now. Check it out. Go to my YouTube page, or just even on Facebook. Let me know what you think of it. If there are any ideas or things that you would like to see us do on the show, let us know. We'll check it out. Maybe we'll just get that involved, and we'll do that. And in some cases, we might even get you guys who are following us out there up to come along with us on these paranormal adventures and be part of the show. So you never know what the future can hold. With that being said, I want to give a shout-out to all my sponsors, Chili Man Salsa Company, making that really awesomely hot and full-flavored paranormal salsa that we eat all the time on our shoots. I want to thank Paranormal Technologies, or you guys know them as P-Tech, who makes all our night vision cameras and our lights and my little SB1 unit, which I love very, very much. Thank you, Mike, for making that for me. And I want to give a shout out to Lizzie Wizzy's Crafted Creations, making us all those nice scarves and those beanies and everything that we need to keep us warm as we're running around those cold asylums at night. So you guys know how that is. And, of course, Daniel's Toy Empire. If you're looking for those Ghostbuster toys, go ahead and hit him up. He'll give you what he's got, and if he can find it for you, he will. So, all right, with that being said, that's going to be it for the show tonight. We will see you guys. Not next week, because I have another filming event, because I have to do this all the time. And we will be getting back things on track in August. Got some big paranormal events coming up. Of course, you guys know I will be doing some MC work at the Vulture City Paracon coming up in Vulture City, Arizona. Super cool place. You guys should check it out. Come on down and spend some time with us. Meet me. I'll take you on an investigation. Wherever you want to go on Water City, we'll go. We'll set up some equipment and we'll make it happen. So, in the meantime, we will see you guys 2 weeks. And if you need to go out and investigate, make sure you investigate safe. You know, always go with somebody. Don't go out there alone, especially go abandoned places, and make sure you get permission so someone knows you're out there and makes it safe for you. So, we will see you guys later. You guys have a great evening.
This is John Temporelli, co-author and editor of Heaven Can You Hear Me by the late famed Fox sighting psychic and legendary paranormal researcher Peter James.
This is the ghost host, Sophia Temporelli, and you are listening to
My Darkest Hour with Stefan Brigati on LiveParanormal.com.
The views expressed here within the programs and chats do not necessarily represent the views of LiveParanormal.com.
Thank you for joining us for Live Paranormal Radio. From the paranormal to the unexplained, it all happens here.
It all happens here.
Looking to enhance your radio experience? Participate in our live video chat 24/7 with our live paranormal radio show host and other like-minded people. Live. Paranormal.com, the only interactive social chat room supported by Full Interaction Media. Stop by now and join the fun.